thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
Yep, that's me. We're here till 3 weekdays. This is the John Williams Show on social media, WGN King John. That's me on Facebook.
Lord have mercy.
I just posted something on Facebook for you to see. It has to do with your dream ticket in the Ellen monologue the other day. Not sure what our news click is going to be today, but just speaking of social media, let me start here, then we'll go to that. You can tell us, you can call, you can text, or you can visit on my Facebook page. Again, WGN King John, your dream ticket, please. After the 1:30 edition of WGN Radio News, Jesse Greenberg joins us, a spokesperson for Medline. Yesterday, we had Representative Rita Mayfield on. She's a state lawmaker. She's one of these people that has a bill before the legislature, and it says you can't use ethylene oxide to sterilize medical equipment. Who knew? Who knew? But evidently that stuff's really dangerous, and this company uses that. And when they had a town hall meeting about it the other day in Gurnee, over 1,000 people showed up. I think we're all pretty lackadaisical about getting involved in town hall meetings and civil stuff, civic stuff, but folks are showing up when they think they're going to get sick. And I said, these people need to come on. I was thinking and speaking specifically about Sterigenics. You heard the commercials about them. You've heard the news stories about them. But Medline uses evidently the same stuff. And they said, well, we'll tell you our side of the story. And I think that's important to hear at 1:35. Shout out to them for being part of the debate, because most companies and spokespeople just kind of crawl away from conversations like this. I'm glad they're going to join us at 1:35. Our news click yesterday, when pot becomes legal in January. This response surprised me. You had four options. When pot becomes legal in January. They're having town hall meetings throughout Chicago about how that should be rolled out. So I had questions and suggestions like store hours, can it be close to a school, stuff like that. We asked you to respond to this. When pot becomes legal in January, A, I'll be a customer. I don't use now. You could have also said B, I'll be a customer. I use already. C, I won't be a customer. I already have a good connection. And D, I won't be a customer of anyone. I'm just not going to use. Okay, the number that surprised me in all of that is A, I'll be a customer, I don't use now. 22% put that down. Hokey smokes.
Well, what did you expect?
I thought I'll be a customer, I already use would have won this thing by a landslide.
Yeah, what was that number?
16%. 60% said, I won't be a customer, I'm just not going to go there. But 40% of you are in the game, and 22% said, I don't use now, but once it becomes legal, I will start using. Maybe again, maybe for the first time. 22%.
So I have no real desire to start using.
My wife said to me yesterday, sounds like Steve's kind of a pothead.
I know. I totally know that it does sound that way. But I do, and here it comes again. But I do think I'll try it if it's available, like an edible or something.
That'd be the only way I'd do it. I don't want to smoke anything ever. Like buddies of mine will smoke cigars, you know, once in a blue moon. I don't even do that. It's not appealing to me. I guess I'd have a gummy of it, but I don't think I will. Given the choice to have a gummy or a martini, I'll have a martini every day.
So here's what we'll do.
What will we do?
We'll have
what will we do?
The Bertrands will have the Williamses and the Manfredinis.
I would be so uncomfortable if you whip out some legal cannabis at your party.
Well, you're always a little uncomfortable.
I am.
So we'll do edibles. We'll do gummies.
And
maybe I'll give them, and we'll have drivers, Uber, and then after maybe 2 or 3 hours, Lou will make sense. To us.
I'm not sure that Lou isn't already using some of that stuff anyway.
No. I mean, I don't mean that he doesn't make sense now, but it'll be easier for us to understand what he's saying.
You know what, Lou? I see it now.
Right.
Boom.
I got it. That is an idea. I should do that.
A lot less work to get from here to there. I'll be a customer. I use already 16%. I'll be a customer I don't use at all, 22%. And then 2% said, I like my connection already, I'm good. You're not even going to go in the legit market.
Those are the wisecrackers.
60% of you said no thank you to the whole dang thing. I think this is nice, and it's worth replaying. Ellen was at the Dallas Cowboys game. She was at the Cowboys Stadium with the Joneses. They own the team. She's friends with George Bush. He was sitting next to her. She did about a six-minute monologue about that. I've cut it down to the, I think, most important 2 minutes here. Ellen's a national treasure. She's funny. She's not super judgmental. If you thought she was, listen to this. And I think she's just trying to make a simple point here. This is Ellen from yesterday's show.
This weekend, I went to Dallas for the Cowboys game. So Portia and I were invited by Charlotte Jones. She's the daughter of Jerry Jones, who owns the Dallas Cowboys. And we went because we wanted to keep up with the Joneses. And he's got fancy friends. And I don't mean fancy like Real Housewife fancy. I mean like fancy. Look, this is, I took a video of who was next to me. So that was Portia, and that was Charlotte Jones Portia was talking to, and George W. Bush. And then in front of us was the tallest man in the world. And so I've got to say, when we were invited, I was aware that I was going to be surrounded with people from very different views and beliefs. And I'm not talking about politics. I was rooting for the Packers. And get this, everybody in the Cowboys suite was rooting for the Cowboys. And so I had to hide my cheese hat in Porsche's purse. And don't get me wrong. I like the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. I love all the Village people, as a matter of fact. But during the game, they showed a shot of George and me laughing together. And so people were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And but a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. And but here's one tweet that I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again. Thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. For instance, I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur. And I'm friends with people who are furry, as a matter of fact. I have friends who should tweeze more. But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
Not bad, huh? So I was watching that going, oh, God bless you, Ellen. And I even have problems with some of her logic there, but I'm not going to fight that fight right now. The main thing is, yeah, let's just be nice to everyone. There's your be best. There's your anti-bullying campaign writ large. So I asked on Facebook, who's your dream ticket? Because mine is now Ellen and W, except I can't have W, so Ellen and Laura seems to be fine. In fact, Laura was, I think for a lot of us during the 8 years that George was president, Laura was the rock. So let's go with Laura and Ellen. I don't care who's president or vice president, just give them a go. You know, you have a conservative, you've got a liberal, you've got a couple of ladies, you've got one gay, one straight. They both fought a lot of fights. They seem to have their wits about them. I've got good things to say about that ticket. What's yours? I've asked that on my Facebook page, WGN King John. You can also text to 312-981-7200. I'll read your text. Different subject for a second here. Hey, Beth, this is John. You're on the air. What's up?
Hi. Just two quick things. One about Ellen, what she was just saying. I have a saying. I can't find it right now, but I believe the first line of it is, kindness is more important than wisdom. I really like that.
Yeah.
The second thing is you were talking about, and I'm sorry, I don't know the correct terms, about, let's just call it marijuana, that there are legal aspects of using marijuana in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, if someone comes to Illinois to visit,
yeah,
are those same laws going to apply to that person? In other words, they've got the new freedoms or whatever we're going to call it.
I think, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not exactly sure I understand. Here's what I think will happen, though, as it does in Colorado. You and I can go to Colorado, and we can use pot there. We can't bring it here. My guess is that would be the case, that you can't take it through Iowa because it's not legal in Iowa. That's my my guess.
Okay. Well, thank you. It was just a question. I'm neither a user nor do I intend to be.
But, all right, I'll put you down in that one. You're in the 60%, but 22% said, I'm not a customer, I don't use pot, but I will be once it becomes legal. How about that?
Well, that's interesting, and again, I'm not all that familiar with it. I know that it's used for many different things, and I hope that I never feel like I need to use it.
Well, do you drink alcohol?
I would put down occasionally, like let's say once a month or less.
Are you curious, though? Like, would you say, gee, but I wonder what all the fuss is about, and it's not going to kill me, and it's 100% legal now. So you come over to my Thanksgiving thing, and I've got a little bowl of gummies out, and they're laced with that. Would you pop one in there?
Well, thank you very much, but I already have an invitation for Thanksgiving.
All right, fair enough. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Have a good day. I can answer that. The thing is, for those of us who's, you know, maybe you used marijuana all along and have done so illegally, and you've made your peace with that, and then some of us have not used marijuana all along, in part because it was illegal and we just didn't want to cross that line. For either set, once it becomes legal, it just seems to me like that will be a very different feeling, won't it? The mystery will be gone. It's literally endorsed by the state. You can do it on the front porch, for crying out loud. It will be okay, but it will still feel not as okay to me as alcohol or something else that, you know, is legal. It'll still feel weird to see people doing that. So we'll see how that goes. It's 119. You can text 312-981-7200, your dream ticket. Be interested in seeing what those look like. And then let's talk about the police in Chicago. How bothered are you by the fact that they park illegally at things you don't get to park to at all? Where are we here, Producer Olive? It's 1:23. Remember now, after 1:35, we'll visit, after the 1:30 news, around 1:35, with a spokesperson for Medline, that company that Rita Mayfield said needs to be shut down. She was on our show yesterday, the state lawmaker. Let's talk a little bit about that chemical that's in the Chicago area, the same one that they used at the Sterigenics plant that went away. Oh, and then in the 2 o'clock hour, Ray Kaplan joins us again, the always popular guest. She's the debt relief lawyer. She talks about student loans. Here's the question that we've asked her to answer, because it's FAFSA season. If you've got kids that are going to college, or know some that are, and you and or the parents or those kids are going to start borrowing money, you fill out those federal aid forms. My question is, who should borrow the money? You or the student? Should you borrow it from a private lender first or a federally backed lender first? Like, what is the order of event for you all to line up your money to get through college?
The family plus or parents plus, that's a higher interest rate.
That's the thing. Right. But here's the thing, though. If the student borrows the money, then they have less money, so they qualify for more, right?
I like when she's on, because it's better than listening to radio psychics. You know?
What do you mean by that?
People call with their problems and she fixes them.
And like, she really does. Right. Yeah. All right, we'll answer those questions in a little bit. Catch Healthy Living Chicago. That's this Saturday at 9. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans on health and fitness, living healthy. Saturdays at 9 on WGN-TV. Elif just handed me, relative to Ellen, the dream tickets here. John, when pot becomes legal, John Williams needs to smoke a joint on the air. Mm-hmm. 815, gummies are usually a lot stronger than inhaling, just FYI, said 815. 847, don't be such a square, John. It'll loosen you up more than anything. I'm sure it will. I've always been this square. When all the other kids were kids and I was a kid, I was still this. 773, Michelle Obama and Dr. Jill Biden. John, my dream ticket would be Neil Tyson and Bill Nye. The slogan would be Make America Smart Again. John, I'm not a user, but I'm curious to see if it'll help me to sleep. Well, that's how some people use this stuff, you know, for reasons other than getting high. D. Deanna says our neighbors, about 60 years old, are planning a January 1st pot party. They haven't used since the 1970s. Boy, there's a news story. Steve, write that down in the news log. January 1st, December 31st, pot parties.
Yeah. Do you want that invitation? I think it could be a fun party to be at.
708, Buttigieg and Warren. Yeah, I'm looking for ones that aren't that. Here's one, 773. Here's my dream ticket. Williams and Bertrand, Leff and Kahn. Okay, that's four people. Maybe I'll be attorney general or something. Let them do the heavy lifting. 309, it's still federally illegal. Yeah, that makes it complicated. 847, Tammy Duckworth for president. I need more dream tickets. Somebody has Tiger Woods in here. I'm not judging. It's, you know, whoever you have faith in is who I want to know. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. What'd you want to say, Jim? Hi.
Hey, first of all, I'd like to say that back in the day, I loved pot. I used to smoke it a lot.
Yeah.
And when I got married, I used to just use it for, you know, going to sleep. It works really good for that.
Yeah.
But when my kids got a little older, they, you know, I had to get rid of it because they got curious and stuff. But my point was, these people that are just going to try it and stuff like that, they got to be careful. Nobody talks about what pot does for, like, older, heavy people and stuff like that. It's very bad for blood pressure. You know, they think that you can just mellow out and so whatever, but it raises your blood pressure so much that some of the dizziness and some of the euphoria that you feel and stuff is not just the pot. It's chemically raising blood pressures and stuff like that that people don't realize.
Yeah, I didn't know.
There might be a lot of people. Yeah, might be a lot of people in the hospital or doctors, you know, saying, "Hey, you know, I felt like I was, you know, having a heart attack or something like that." Like I said, I'm heavy, and I don't do it too much. Well, I don't do it at all, but right now, but I have tried it in my, you know, like 2 years ago and stuff like that, and I had a reaction in that respect. I told everybody else I drank too much, but
it wasn't that. Well, my understanding is it's a lot more potent than the stuff you were maybe trying in the 70s or 80s, too.
Right, right. But, you know, there's still people that can get it on the street or whatever nowadays. Like I said, 2 years ago, now that's, you know, after 2000, I tried it because, like I said, I used to like it. So it was a New Year's Eve party one time, and I did it.
Well, I don't know when it got more potent. That's just what I hear. What were you going to say, Steve Bertrand?
Well, I've heard that, too, but this is strictly regulated, the potency level of the what's going to be sold. In
yeah.
fact, they go in and check, and if it exceeds the level, the law is the entire crop is destroyed. So I don't think there's going to be runaway levels in what's going to be legally sold.
Hmm. Thank you for the call, Jim. Hey, John, Kasich and Buttigieg. Now, that's, what would you call that, a moderate Republican and a liberal. John, my dream ticket would be Pat Sajak and Bob Eubanks. They have the skill set it would take to run the circus. this texter says, I smoked pot lightly every day in the early 1980s. I quit to get pregnant. Pregnancy made me drowsy and ill. Yet at my next performance review, my boss said he'd seen a huge performance improvement. That was the 80s pot, far less potent than the current stuff. I will not be using pot come January 1st. If you were a daily user, just to take the edge off, maybe before work, whenever, who knows, maybe you were walking through that decade slightly in the fog. She stops to get pregnant, and zing, she's, well, like her boss said, a huge performance improvement. Who knew? Alex, you're on WGN. Thanks for calling in. What can I do for you? Hey, Alex.
Hey, John.
Hey, you're on the air. What's up?
Not much. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you, sir.
So I used to listen to you guys with my grandfather way, way back in the day with Paul Harvey and everybody. But, he passed away a couple years ago, so it was tough for me to pick up the dial and tune in to you guys, but I've been doing it recently. Anyway, the whole pot ordeal going on, you know, I used to do it back in the day, and then, you know, I was doing other things as well, and it caused a lot of problems in life, so I just completely cut out everything. But if it works for people, it works. I know for me, it, you know, it took the edge off. It made me eat more, you know, cause a little bit of paranoia every once in a while. But if it works for people, it works. I'm excited to see where it goes, as well as all the other states we have that are pushing for it.
Let me ask you this. Well, yeah, that's maybe what you're about to get to. So as a person who used to use that and harder drugs, are you worried that you can legally use it now, but it might send you down a path that you don't want to go down?
No, I mean, it's the same thing with alcohol. Like, I'm in recovery, so I've been sober a little over 3 years. And, you know, it's kind of like the thing with alcohol. Alcohol is legal. You know, I'm over the age where I can buy alcohol. I just don't do it because I know the consequences of what happens if I were to, you know, have a drink or, you know, smoke a joint or whatever.
Yeah, so you're not going to use it all, huh?
No, I mean, I'm completely abstinent from everything. It causes too many problems.
Good for you, though. Wow, that's an angle I hadn't thought about. Nice to hear your voice on the radio. You got to listen and call in more often.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Alex.
All right, thank you, guys.
Your grandpa done you good. Phil, where's a fun, unique, affordable date night in the Northwest Burbs?
That one drove me nuts. First, I thought is Use Mandarin, which is in Schaumburg on Golf Road. One of the things they do is they hand pull their own noodles. And on weekends, where I'm assuming this first date is taking place, they will do hand pulling noodle demonstrations that you can see from the dining room.
Yeah.
And it's colorful and it's real nice inside.
Well, who doesn't want a hand pulled noodle on a first date? So that's nice to hear.
Right. Well, you gotta watch these guys do it. It's pretty.
I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
He missed it completely. Didn't hear a word he said, or I said, for that matter.
Cause tans all fade and the memories do too. Life is short and sweet, concise like a high.
138. This is WGN. Hi, I'm John Williams. We sure appreciate you tuning into the little radio program here. Phil Vitale often joins us Wednesdays at this time. You heard him there. He can't join us today, and we have a guest that I really want to talk to as well. Now, again, yesterday, Rita Mayfield, a state representative from, I believe, Gurnee, was on the show. She's one of these lawmakers that has a bill. Maybe it'll be a law, and it'll say essentially you can't use ethylene oxide to sterilize surgical equipment. Companies do this for hospitals and other people that need stuff sterilized, and I don't know much about that field, but she's looked into it. Before we put somebody on from Medline, one of the companies, I just want you to hear, say, about 90 seconds of that conversation from yesterday.
My bill calls for a phase-out of ethylene oxide. My bill is House Bill 3888, and what it does, it phases out the use of ethylene oxide by 2021.
Hospitals need to sterilize the equipment. Somebody's got to do it.
The argument that we're getting from the manufacturers is that ethylene oxide is the only sterilization method that is available, and we know that to not be true. And in fact, the U.S. EPA is calling, you know, for innovation and sterilization to protect human life, because we know that ethylene oxide is a human carcinogen.
If this stuff is this injurious or dangerous, should there have been some governmental oversight?
Well, that is the mission of the Illinois EPA, and surprisingly, or maybe unsurprisingly enough, we have all asked that same question. Why was the Illinois EPA not monitoring? They have failed to protect the environment. They failed to protect communities. They failed to protect our children. We had a local community forum. Over 1,000 people in the area showed up against ethylene oxide and what's going on, and to voice their concern and to strongly stand together and say, we need to close down Medline. We need to do something now. We had a mother who was there representing other mothers whose children were all diagnosed with lymphoma. How many children need to be diagnosed before this good corporate neighbor, as they like to keep telling us that they are, finally says, we're going to do something?
Boy, they never, you know, we reached out to them, I'll bet 10 times, and said, I'm sure that there's another side to the story. The last part you heard me there saying that we reached out to them maybe 10 times is true, but I regret that the company that I was talking about at that particular point was Sterigenics. Sterigenics was the one that was getting a lot of attention. Attorneys advertise on this radio station and say Sterigenics all the time. It's like we were being invaded from Mars. Who is this alien force in our community? They need to come on and tell us who they are, and they never, ever would. They're gone. But the company that she was talking about is Medline, and I, to be honest with you, had not reached out to them. But they sure did reach out to us, and I'm glad they did. Jesse Greenberg is on the line. Jesse, thanks for joining us on WGN Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Where are you located?
So I'm located in Waukegan, which is the site of our manufacturing and medical product sterilization facility.
I have a couple questions about what we just heard, but while it's fresh on our ears, why don't you jump in? Based on what you just heard, what do you want to say first and foremost?
Yeah, so it's a good discussion you were having yesterday, and again, just really appreciate the chance to come on. I think that there were some factual inaccuracies that were mentioned by the state representative that I'd just like to take the opportunity to correct. And first and foremost is the question about alternative sterilization methods for different medical products. And it is true that there are several different ways that medical products can be sterilized, but for many, many products, many important products that surgeons rely on every day, for those products, ethylene oxide is the only way in which those products can be sterilized. It's a method in which the FDA recognizes. So, John, we're talking about items like syringes, drapes, pacemakers, tubing, very common products that when a surgeon is seeing a patient, what we do here is that we manufacture these surgical kits, and then we sterilize them, we seal them, and then they go out to about, we supply somewhere around 80% of Illinois hospitals with surgical kits. Hmm. We pack 16,000 of these kits a day. So our role in the healthcare system is really critical. It's essential, and you know, there's just no alternative, unfortunately, for sterilization of many, many medical products.
I never thought about that. I'm sure none of us did. You go to the hospital, we assume in America everything's sterilized and clean. It is. We don't think about the process. So those things you just described,
yeah,
say if it's a hand tool that the surgeon uses or somebody uses, do you dip it in a vat of this stuff? Is it a liquid chemical that you use?
So the product comes into our facility as a liquid. It's converted to a gas. The products themselves, right, they are all packaged first, and then they are sterilized once they are packed. And so what ethylene, the uniqueness of ethylene oxide is that it can penetrate different kinds of packing. It can get into the inside of a syringe or the inside of a an electronic device, whereas other methods of sterilization, let's say one that uses heat or steam, you know, that would be a very different methodology, and it would alter or even destroy some of these items that surgeons rely on. So that's why ethylene oxide is used, and at the moment, there just is no alternative for many products.
She said it's carcinogenic.
Yeah, understood. And so, you know, that's why that there is such strict federal and state regulations, as there should be when you're talking about a gas, a chemical like ethylene oxide. But I just want to reassure your listeners that the way that Medline uses ETO here in Waukegan is safe. And I would just point first and foremost to our record. You know, over the course of 25 years that we've operated here, we've never received a federal, state, local violation related to ethylene oxide. In the 25 years we've operated here, we've never had an employee incident or illness linked to ethylene oxide. Currently, we are capturing 99% of the ethylene oxide that we use at this facility. 99% is captured here. Now, because of the Illinois legislature's leadership, John, over the last year, our state has now the strictest regulations for ethylene oxide use in the entire country.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's very good. I mean, the Illinois legislature, Representative Mayfield and her colleagues, they prioritize public health as they should, and we stand very strongly with ensuring that health and safety of our employees and the public is the number one priority.
Well, Jesse, and how do you explain the 1,000 people at that town hall meeting and the at least anecdotal evidence that some of the kids in that area have lymphoma?
Yeah, so, you know, I attended that meeting, and it was a good discussion. You had some of the leading regulators from the Illinois EPA and the CDC there, and it was really good that State Senator Melinda Bush provided that opportunity for some accurate information to get out. And look, you know, when anybody, any family is dealing with an illness like cancer, I mean, you can't help but have your heart to go out to those people. There's no question like that. And we've all have individual stories of people who have fallen ill to cancer. But you know, the real question is, what kind of precautions, what kind of procedures do you have in place to ensure the health and safety of the community? And we're very proud at Medline. We're currently investing now millions of dollars to install best available technology. And as before, we were capturing 99% of ethylene oxide used. By the end of November, John, we're going to be capturing 99.9%.
Jesse, are you saying that it's coincidental then that these parents are saying my kids are sick? It's a coincidence that those kids are sick?
I'm saying that there's no way to link the operation at Medline with incidents of cancer. There is no scientific evidence to suggest that we are anyway cause of these illnesses.
What about that Illinois EPA report in 2016? Can you talk a little bit about that, or the U.S. EPA? They had a report.
It was an office in the U.S. EPA that came out with a study in 2016. And I think that's really the foundation of what a lot of people have concerns are, because there's a lot of misinterpretation of what that data is. And there's a lot of public debate about what kind of methodology ought to be used to really look at these different risks, because that study didn't look at incidence of cancer, okay? It didn't look at actual cases of cancer. And I think that's a very important distinction. I think it's also important.
What did it look at, Jesse?
It's a mathematical formula to look at different risk factors, right? It's hard to capture all of that into one formula. And I would also say that what wasn't captured there was the long historical trove of really important studies over the course of the last 40 years. John, there's been 13 studies covering five countries over the last 40 years that has looked at workers that have been dealing with ethylene oxide, so folks that have been exposed to high levels of ethylene oxide. And in those studies, there is no causal link. Again, there's no causal link to cancer and dealing with ethylene oxide.
Let me ask you this.
I understand people's concerns, right? Jack. I mean, those are good. They're valid concerns, and people should be seeking out the truth.
But you say they have no basis in science, that it's coincident then that some of the kids are becoming sick. How many employees work at your facilities?
Yeah, so in Waukegan, we have 700 employees here.
How many of them handle ethylene oxide?
A good number of them, right? So I don't have the exact numbers, but what we have here is two side-by-side facilities. We have our manufacturing operation, which I've talked about, which is involved in packing the kits, and then those kits are then boxed, they're crated, and they move over to our sterilization facility.
My question is this, Jesse. All of that to say, what's the incidence of illness, cancer, or otherwise with your employees?
Again, in our 25 years, we've had zero incidence of cancer linked to ethylene oxide.
Well, then how did this, you know, I know you're not Sterigenics, and maybe Sterigenics had different issues because we heard their name more than we heard yours.
Sure.
But then how did this thing get out of the bag for you? How did this perception come that Medline and Sterigenics and this chemical are so unsafe?
Yeah, you know, it's been just many, many months. You know, there's probably, people have had a lot of concerns, a lot of valid concerns. Perhaps they were not answered in the appropriate way and early enough. Perhaps regulators could have done more to get information out there. But it's a really tricky issue. You know, you're talking about a very scientific issue that at times can be difficult to explain. And what people want to hear, what people see, is when they're afraid, it's an emotional issue for a lot of people.
Well, I think that
when you're when you're looking at an emotional issue versus a scientific issue, it's sometimes really hard to break through.
Anecdotal evidence can be hard to defeat, and sometimes I think there's something to the anecdotes, but I would defer to the science on something like this. which makes it a little disquieting when the state lawmaker says you need to get the Illinois EPA to do something about this. So I don't know if that's passing the buck. I don't know whose responsibility the safety of the community is. Is it you, the people that run the company? You seem to think it's safe. Maybe you're telling the truth. Maybe it is. Maybe you wish it was, but it's not so safe. So then say, okay, let's get somebody else involved in this. And to me, that would be the Illinois EPA. And she said, yeah, they need to step up their game. So now I'm back to square one on this. I'll also say this. I lived near an airport for years, and there was no health issue at the airport, according to the airport or according to the EPA. And yet the incidence of cancer and disease for people who lived in the flight path near the runway was off the chain. Everybody knew a lot of people around the airport who had illnesses of a variety, and they were serious, and they were cancers and other things. And nobody came out with a scientific study to say these airplanes are causing that. But every day the spray of jet fumes over the community, you had to think couldn't be good. So all we had was the anecdotal evidence. We had no scientific legs to stand on. But it still was very upsetting to people. And it feels like this in this case, too. All of that from me. Respond to that, Jesse, after this on WGN. Jesse Greenberg's on a phone line. He's a spokesperson for Medline. Jesse, I made a few statements a moment ago. We have 2 minutes here. Jump in here. What did you want to say?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, just in response to the comparison, it's really difficult to compare, you know, 747s, exhaust coming out of 747s and what we do here. I mean, we have a very controlled system, and that's why we're able to capture nearly 100% of the ethylene oxide emissions, methylene oxide that we use.
I understand. So, that's a bad comparison.
But John, let me just point out, you mentioned in your comment before the break about studies and about data, and I forgot to mention this, and I do think this is important to your listeners because it's a really hard piece of scientific data, which is that in June 2019, the Lake County Health Department, the City of Waukegan, out of response to concern for the community, they conducted ambient air testing around our facility here in Medline in Waukegan, and what they found is that the average ethylene oxide detected at the 5 closest test locations, okay, that level was 1,000 times lower than the occupational safety level set by the federal government. So that means the level that the federal government says is acceptable for workers to be exposed to, the surrounding ambient air was 1,000 times lower than that.
I'm going to talk to the Illinois EPA about this.
Excellent.
I wonder what they would say about it. Will they champion your cause?
And we've been working closely with the Illinois EPA and other regulators, and it's a very important matter. And we want to continue to get better. We think we're doing that. And we certainly appreciate the leadership of the state EPA and lawmakers who've got the toughest standards on the books.
I'm out of time. Jesse Greenberg, spokesperson for Medline. Jesse, thank you for coming on. I have one other question for you off the air. Answer it for me in a minute. I'll report back to our listeners. Then we'll talk to how you should structure your student loan debt after the news on GN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
We are in the Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. Hi, it's John Williams.
And Lord
have mercy, it's a lovely day in this city. What'd you say the high temperature is going to be today, Steve Bertrand? 72 degrees?
Low 70s, yeah.
Wow. What's the current temperature, Steve?
70.
That's about perfect, right?
It really is.
Wouldn't you take an October day, blue sky, 70 degrees?
This is why we live here.
Yeah.
I know. For these 2 days.
That's my line. That's my line. Lots of calls, questions, and comments about our last guest. I'll say this, and then we're just going to move on because I still want to hear what the EPA says about this. But my great frustration is if it's a politician, if it's a corporate head, if it's somebody that's in the news who's not a private citizen but has some obligation to speak to the public, they just shrink away. For some reason, CPS has been not a good guest on the radio lately, and I think they have an obligation to come on more often. Same with the CTU. I know those two sides need to negotiate as best they can, probably best in private. But if you're going to lob accusations at each other publicly saying you're not bargaining in good faith, then I think those people need to bring that to the public table here and let us weigh the, say, conduct of the two sides. And they haven't been real good about that. Anyway, so here comes Medline, having their name dragged through the mud yesterday. And again, you can agree with everything that guy said, or you can disagree. I appreciate their willingness to come on and take the questions, and sure, they're going to put their take on it out there, but I tend to come from this place. I don't think people are liars. I think people generally tell the truth, and I also think people are good. There's 700 people that work at that place, and I don't think they're bad people. They're your neighbors and mine. Hopefully, that company is operating in good faith and safely. And I'm very interested in the fact that Rita Mayfield said, where's the Illinois EPA on this? Okay, right, maybe we shouldn't trust a lawmaker, and maybe we shouldn't trust the company. We'll reach out to them, too. It's 208 on WGN Radio. I saw a story the other day. Did you see this? It said, it's FAFSA season. I didn't know it was a season.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm like, oh, we don't have to do that.
I know.
When I say we, my wife doesn't have to do that anymore.
When you get out of college jail, hey, first of all, how fortunate for you if you do get into college jail. But when you get out of college jail, that's a beautiful thing. When you no longer have to stress about saving for and helping your kids pay for their college education. Now, the guest we bring in frequently to this studio on this topic is Rae Caplan. You hear her commercials here sometimes on WGN Radio. She's a debt relief lawyer, but she specializes in educational loans. We asked her to come back. Hi, Rae. How are you?
Hi, John. Great. Thank you.
Is that a thing? FAFSA season?
It's FAFSA season. Yes.
You didn't bring a pie or anything. It sounds like a fun time of year, but it's when you fill out the forms if your kids are going to qualify for student loans?
Yeah. So usually they're due by October 1st every year, and you really want to get them filled out before October every year, so as early as you can. And I think there's a lot of confusion out there for parents and for student borrowers about what exactly they're signing on for, how much aid or federal student loans they're entitled to. And that's something that, you know, I was hoping to talk about today because I know people are confused about it.
Well, the form is just sort of a economic assessment of you, right?
Right. So the form, the FAFSA is used by the Department of Ed and the school to determine your estimated rate of contribution as a family to your kid's education. And so they apply a formula between the Department of Ed and the school that you're attending, and then they can determine how much of that, I think it's $7,500 is the cap for undergrad each year, how much of that the student borrower is eligible for. So depending on your economic circumstances, you're either going to qualify for, you know, somewhere between $3,000 and $7,500 per year per student borrower.
And borrowing, I mean, I can borrow all the money I want from a private lender. This is a federal program that I'm talking about.
Right.
So that's how much you can get in a federally backed loan. Do you get that from the federal government, or do you get that from a bank, but the federal government supports it or something like
no,
that?
No, you get it. You can get it from, it'll come from the Department of Education.
I see. Mm-hmm. And is that the, okay, so now I'm confused about prioritizing who should borrow the money, the student or the parent or the grandparents, and where you should borrow it from.
Right. And so this is the part that requires a little bit of financial analysis on our end, you know, to apply to the family in question. But in general, because we know if your kid is going to undergrad, there's a cap on the amount that they can take out as the student borrower. And that's only going to be about $7,500 per year. So in the aggregate, total that they're going to get to cover their tuition is going to be $31,000, which usually is not enough to cover all the costs of their education. So then after you...
Over 4 years.
Over 4 years, right. So then that's not going to be enough. So then the next question is, okay, where do we go for the additional funds that we need? I would say the next best thing to do is for this... the student's parents to take out federal Parent PLUS loans. And it's very important that those loans, you also fill out a FAFSA form for those. And those are also coming from the Department of Ed and from the federal government. Only the parents are responsible for them. And there's much more, you have a much greater chance that you're going to get approved for everything you need.
Really, as a Parent PLUS loan?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm writing this down. First, the student borrows via the as much as they can.
Right, those are called direct Stafford subsidized and unsubsidized loans. So take out as much as you can as the student borrower, whatever you're going to be entitled to after they run that formula on you and
from
your parents.
From the federal...
From the feds.
From the Department of Education.
Right.
Say. This is not the student going to a local bank.
No, forget about local banks as much as you can.
Okay, fair enough. So and then the parents should be the next line
right.
of defense.
Exactly. So then the parents are going to borrow federal Parent PLUS loans. And here's the important part. It should be the parent who makes the least amount of money. So federal Parent PLUS loans are easy to qualify for. Anybody who can qualify for a Capital One credit card will be approved for them. So don't worry, you'll get approved for them. But I say that because when we go to calculate what your payment's going to be, when the payments come due, they're going to base that payment based on the borrower's income.
Okay, so one of us makes $100,000, one of us makes $50,000, do it 50. What if one of us makes $75,000 and the other makes none? Can you make it the zero person be the person that gets the Parent PLUS loan?
Yes.
Okay, well then this is critical, really. And so you don't put it in, Brenda and I tend to do things in both of our names. It should be in...
Whoever makes the least.
A married couple should do it in the person's name who makes the least.
Right, for federal loans.
All right.
Right, because when we go to calculate what your payment's going to have to be, it's going to be based on that person's income.
Obviously, the first line of defense, I mean, these are borrowing costs. The first thing would be save as much as you can through, what is the letter and number thing?
Well, maybe.
Really?
Maybe not. Right, that is part of the financial analysis that we do, too. So if you have a student borrower that you know that your child is going to go be a doctor or a teacher in public school and most of their loans are going to be forgiven by the federal government, I would say that it makes more sense at that point to take out all federal funding to subsidize that kid's education.
Before you use the money you saved?
Don't use any of the money you saved.
But I'm going to pay
Zero.
Interest. But I'm going to pay interest on the loans.
No, you actually won't. Interest is going to accrue, but the way the statute is set up, it's going to be based on that student's income and your income if you have federal Parent PLUS loans. And 90% of the time, you pay very little of that interest. That's just the way the statute is set up.
Really?
Yes.
So you would advise, if I've been saving money through that, what is that state program they have in Illinois? It's the something or another. It'll come to me in a second. Somebody text me, 312-981-7200. But you've been saving money through this state supported program. And now I've got $20,000 in the bank or $15,000 or however much. But first go through these borrowing exercises, you think?
Well, so I would say if you have gone through that program, which that name escapes me also right now, but I know what you're talking about.
It's not a 401c3.
No, it's like that's a 529 or something.
Yes.
Right?
You're right.
So it's tax-exempt funds, and you have to use that money for tuition or you take a tax hit. So if you've already done that, use that money for tuition. But you're still probably going to have costs for the kid going to school that you are either they're going to need to take out federal loans for or you're going to need to take out federal Parent PLUS loans. Here's the key I would tell people is that make sure, because a lot of private lenders call their loans Parent PLUS loans, and it confuses the situation. But because you want to take out federal Parent PLUS loans because the payment terms are very forgiving and there's forgiveness, et cetera. But for private Parent PLUS loans, there is nothing like that. So just make sure that your loans are from the Department of Education, not from Citibank or Discover or something like that.
Are there income caps for me to qualify for these loans?
No, not really. I mean, they're very loosely credit based, but again, if you can qualify for a Capital One card, which pretty much everyone can, then you can qualify for federal Parent PLUS.
So if I'm making $150,000 a year, I may still qualify for the Parent PLUS loan.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
312-981-7200. The calls and texts always come in when Ray Kaplan is here. We'll take a couple phone calls. Mike, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Mike?
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My son graduated 2 years ago in 2017. He worked full-time for 2 years as a teacher in Indiana, and then decided he wanted to go back to grad school, okay? He got a pretty good scholarship, but he still has, from undergrad, about $15,000 worth of subsidized and unsubsidized federal student loans. Is he eligible for any kind of a reduction? He's working maybe part-time, little jobs here and there, but nothing full-time, but he still has this student loan over said why he's going back to school, and he had to go full-time because of the program. It couldn't be a part-time grad program.
Hi. So when he's while he's in school, part-time or full-time, he's allowed to defer payments, so he doesn't have to make any payments while he's enrolled in school. Then after he graduates from his graduate program, which, by the way, there's no cap on federal loans for graduate loans. So there's caps on all kinds of, you know, there's caps on everything for undergrad, but no caps again for graduate school for federal loans. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But back to your situation or your son's situation, what he should do is defer all payments until after he graduates. And then when he goes to work, if he's working for the public sector, in other words, if he's working for a public school, then he's going to be entitled to payments that are going to equal 10% of his gross disposable earnings, which is going to be a very low payment. And then after 120 of those payments or 10 years, the balance of the loan is going to be forgiven. So even the years where, and now he does have to be working full time in the public sector, so while he's making those payments, but he can also give us a call and we'd be happy to, you know, set him on the right track. But in the meantime, he doesn't have to make any payments. Don't worry about the interest that's accruing because it's going to be forgiven at the end of that 120 month payment term.
So the interest, why he's deferring it, the interest will be forgiven after the 120 months.
So the interest gets paid by the government on the subsidized loans. That's why they're called subsidized loans, meaning that the government pays the interest while you're in deferment. But on the unsubsidized loans, the interest does continue to accrue. But again, don't worry, because he won't end up paying it anyway.
Okay, we'll leave it at that, and you can pick up business with her later on. But I wish you luck, and get out of the way, because it sounds like a train is coming at you, Mike. Thank you for the phone call. The 529 or Bright Start program. A lot of you are saying, hey, John, Bright Start, 529, 529. Thank you, everybody. I knew it was a number. I knew it was a word. Imagine that. Hi, John. Can you ask if I need to fill out FAFSA for my daughter's second semester? Does it apply for the full year? You do it once a year? Do you do it once at all? Do you do it every semester? How often do you fill out a FAFSA?
It depends on the school. You can do it once in October and then once again, I think, for the second semester, whenever that would be. But I think you can take out all the loans just the once per year in October, before October 1st. But check with your financial advisor at the financial aid office.
Joanne, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi. I have a daughter who finished undergraduate debt-free, did a two-year program to become a physician assistant. And I'm wondering if she would qualify for some of these past that $58,000. It's from the Department of Education, and then my husband and I co-signed on private loans for about $35,000.
So you're at $93,000 there.
So for the federal portion, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but for the federal portion of her loans, is she working for a private practice or does she work for a hospital?
She is going to start working in the emergency room at a hospital in December.
Oh, great. Okay, so as long as she's working full-time at a hospital that's a 501c3, a not-for-profit, like here in Chicago, it's, you know, Northwestern or Lutheran General. Most of them are...
Okay, she's
going
to be with the AMITA group.
Yes, AMITA. That'll qualify,
okay.
Too. And so as long as she's full-time or what they consider full-time, which is 30 hours a week or more, then she's going to qualify for public sector loan forgiveness. So what's going to happen is, but she's got to be in the right payment plan, which is going to be an income-driven plan. We can also take care of it for her if she wants us to help her.
But this would be 10% of the quote-unquote disposable
10%
income.
10% of her gross disposable earnings, not her and her husband, just hers. And that's the
mistake people
make, too, is they over...
Yeah.
Submit income, but just her income. So 10% is what she's going to be eligible for. And then she's got to certify her employment with Fed Loan Servicing. They are the ones who have a contract with the Department of Ed to oversee all public sector loan forgiveness applications. So as long as she, it's basically all about compliance with the statute, kind of like when you are filling out your taxes. It's the same thing.
Wasn't there a story, or didn't you tell us once, what percentage of people do all of that and do it correctly? How many people are leaving debt forgiveness on the table?
90%.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing that frustrates me to the end of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to do this, then let's make it understandable and manageable for people.
Right.
Are you doing all of the things that she's talking about, Joanne?
Well, I'm just becoming aware of it, listening to the commercials that you do with Ray and listening to this segment. So, a couple of questions, too, are why does the federal government charge such a high interest rate to these students? It's like 6.8%, and the interest starts you accrue from the day you take the loan out.
That's true. It's true. And it's set by Congress, and it is capped, and it's a fixed rate. But again, don't worry about it, because if you do it the right way, she's not going to end up paying.
All right, but that's silly too, right? If the Congress is going to pass a law that said we'll do debt forgiveness, why are they making the clock start early at a rate higher than I could get elsewhere? I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
Right, I know. It's just the statute was written, especially with the public sector loan forgiveness, to encourage people to go into the public sector. So your daughter will definitely benefit from this. It's just that you have to be in compliance with the statute. That's the most important thing. So right payment plan, right type of job, right type of loans, and make sure she has Stafford loans and not something called FEL, F-F-E-L. Those loans don't qualify, but we can turn them into Stafford loans if they are the wrong type.
Okay, so what is your number, Ray, so I can have Maggie call you?
Nope, not going to put that on the radio. Sorry.
It's 312-294-8989.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for listening. My best to your daughter and your family. They're sitting on $93,000 in debt for 2 years after she's gone through school for four. Lee, you're on WGN Radio with Ray Kaplan. Hi, Lee, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My grandniece has a 9-year-old daughter, Abby. What should she be doing in preparation for going to college?
Yeah, what a great question.
Well, I think it's always a good idea to save some money or to take part in the Bright Start program and to set aside some money. It really is a personal preference. However, I would say that if that's not a possibility, to not worry too much, because again, she's going to be qualified for federal student loans, Stafford and subsidized and unsubsidized. Again, they're capped for undergrad, but her parents or legal guardian can take out federal Parent PLUS loans to take care of the balance. And then if she decides to go to grad school, there's no limit on what she can take out to cover cost of tuition and room and board for grad school from the federal government. So everything will be covered. And then again, we have this really great statute that allows for payment plans that's like 10% of gross disposable income. And then for federal Parent PLUS loans, that calculation is for the parent borrower, 20% of gross disposable income. So and parents are also eligible for public sector loan forgiveness on Parent PLUS loans. So there's a lot of forgiveness of loans out there that people are not taking advantage of.
Good luck to you all on that, Lee. Nice of you to ask that in advance. What about divorced families, says 630? Should the child ask the parent that's earning the least to co-sign on the Parent PLUS loan or to sign up for a Parent PLUS loan?
Yes, whoever is earning the least of the parents should take out a federal Parent PLUS loan. And the other thing about federal Parent PLUS loans is that just the parent borrower is responsible. They never get transferred to the student. The student is not responsible for them. It's just the parent.
What if the parent has trouble paying down the road?
Well, then again, then
well, it's their disposable income.
Yeah, it's their disposable income.
If you're financially strapped, then the amount you owe goes down as well.
I mean, we have parents in income-based payment plans that their payment is $0 per month until the payment term runs out.
After 10 years?
After 10 years, and then the balance is wiped out.
Well, did you say if I'm on Social Security, what happens then?
So, yeah, there's something else called a TPD discharge, meaning if you're on Social Security, SSI, or you get some other type of disability benefit and you're not working, you may be eligible for total forgiveness of all of your loans, even Parent PLUS loans. And that's something that we would want to go through with you because there is a 3-year monitoring period afterwards. But it's definitely possible to get rid of those loans.
773 said, oh, my God, Ray has helped us so much. But 630 said the loan forgiveness program only approves 1% of those who apply. Is that true?
That's if you do it yourself and you mess it up. So basically
Most people are screwing this up.
People are messing it up. And here's where they mess up. They either have the wrong type of loans. They have FEL loans, or they are not certifying their employment that they're employed by a government entity, or they're in the wrong type of payment plan. And being in the wrong type of payment plan is really a big one, guys. You can't be in a balance-based plan, which is like the extended graduated or the graduated plans. You have to be in an income-driven plan. That's really important. And those payments where those months where you put your loans in forbearance or deferment won't count. So the clock doesn't start ticking until you're in an income-driven plan, and then it's 120 payments from there. So sometimes people get declined only because they apply for it and they're a month or two too early. So then they have to apply a month or two later, and then they get the public sector loan forgiveness.
312, does she mean loans are forgiven if my student becomes a doctor or teacher? This is confusing.
Yes.
Okay, doctor, teacher, but what if I work for a municipality? What if I'm a clerk for the police station?
Yes.
I'm working for the public sector.
That's right.
I don't know what the percentage is. Shoot, I forgot to ask. Elif, did we ever find out what percentage of people in America are public sector employees? I still need that percentage. Look that up and repeat it to me on the air. Okay, lots of calls, lots of texts. The phone number for ACAP, and we're out of time, is 312-981-7200. 312.
No, that's your number.
It's 312-294-8989.
That's right.
312-294, as in the Tri-State Tollway, 8989. 312.
As in?
Mike Ditka's phone, football number? Or,
right.
Yes.
Mike Ditka's jersey number.
So just think Ditka's driving on the Tri-State here in the Chicago area, and you get 312-294-8989. The website is?
Financialrelief.com.
Ray, thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Ray
anytime.
Kaplan, Kaplan Law Firm, 228 WGN.
Desperado. Sitting in a old Monte Carlo. A man as hot as hollow. Take it easy. I'm not trying to go against you. Actually, I'm going with you. Gotta get up out of here and you will leave.
237. 237 on WGN. Right after the 230 news, Elif always plays something for a reason. What are you playing and why?
Rihanna tells Vogue magazine that the reason she turned down the Super Bowl halftime show last year is because, quote, I'm not a sellout.
I want to know what her definition of a sellout. Oh, not that she can't sell out. I thought, yeah, you sell out. Everybody comes to your concerts. She means that it would be too, what, commercial? It would be a sellout for her to do the Super Bowl?
Yeah, that's what people mean when they say that.
I know. Pardon me. But really, I didn't know that was... So is she going to do the Super Bowl this year? No, it's J-Lo this year, and...
It's sellouts this year, every year.
It's always... They're featuring sellouts this year. All right, that's her take on that.
I like J-Lo and Shakira, they're cool.
238, this is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, Rokan, Anna DeVlantis and company entertain you starting at 3 after WGN Radio News. Remember, if you go to WGNradio.com/Teddy, you can still get tickets. I think there are 10 seats left on the main floor for our Teddy Roosevelt show this Saturday. He walks on to stage. Really, the 26th president does. I talked to him for a little while, and you get to ask questions. It's hilarious. It's mind-bending. It's really smart. And whatever's on your mind, he will answer. I'll leave it at that for now. But go to WGNradio.com/Teddy to find out more. So in our studio are three people. One is the director of the Institute for Justice Clinic. I'm not sure exactly what it is. Beth Krieger, hi. Welcome to the show. What do you do, Beth?
I am the director of the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship.
That's exactly what it says to me here. And I thought, no, that can't be the name of that. What is it that you all do?
Well, we're a legal aid clinic at the University of Chicago Law School, and we are lawyers and boosters and legal advocates for low-income entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurs. Well, that's the link, because we have a couple of entrepreneurs here, but I don't see the connection between law and entrepreneurship. What are you doing there?
Well, whenever someone starts a business, there's a lot of legal issues that are going to crop up. People have to figure out what the law says about their businesses, how to get licenses, and how to draft contracts and work with their staff and
how
their
should
suppliers
I incorporate? Should I be an LLC? That sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yes. And what's that relationship going to be like with my co-founders? There are so many decisions that need to be made, and lawyers can really help entrepreneurs navigate through that process.
And then you all have an event where you try and find entrepreneurs in the area? Is it a competition? What is that all about?
Yes. So tomorrow night, we have our culminating event for Southside Pitch. It's a contest that's been going on since the summer to find the most exciting innovators who are coming up out of the South Side of Chicago.
Specifically for that part of the city, huh?
Yes.
And how do you determine what the South Side of the city is, and how do you connect with these people? How do you all find each other?
Well, we have kind of a simple-minded definition of the South Side. We just think it's south of the loop.
Yeah.
Although I think individuals have a lot of different definitions of the South Side.
Yeah.
So we just get the word out for people to apply, and people apply from all over the South Side. They apply online initially.
What are we trying to do? Determine who has the best business idea?
Yes.
Kind of like Shark Tank here?
Yes, it is.
What do they win if they win?
Like a live Shark Tank. Tomorrow night, we'll have six finalists giving their best pitches to a panel of judges and an audience. The audience votes, too. And the winner gets $5,000.
Wow.
And a membership to the Polsky Exchange Incubator. And there are cash prizes for second and third place as well.
Two of those entrepreneurs and would-be winners, finalists, are in our studio with you. Sylvia Emwa is here. Hi, Sylvia. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Thank you.
And Josh Williams is here, too. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Josh, what's your invention or idea?
So, this is a career change for me and my wife. We started eco-friendly on-demand service quality car wash that comes to you called Wash on Wheels. So it operates much like Uber. You just go to the app, date, time, and location, and we'll come to you and wash your car.
Wow. So I could be at work and somebody would be, when I get off of work, my car would be clean.
Yep. If you would have talked to me before now, you know, we would have set it up and you gone down to a clean car.
I take the L. I'd have you do the whole train. You wouldn't want to do that. Really? So then how do you price that out?
What is the price? Well, exterior wash is $30 and exterior and interior is $35. And then there are add-ons if you have an excessive pet hair or if you've been off-roading or something, it could be a little bit more.
How do I get into the vehicle? How do you get into my vehicle?
Well, that's the thing. If you want an interior wash, you would need to be on site. Maybe if you're at work, you could come down and unlock it. There are some people who have fancy cars, not me, who can unlock them remotely.
So you got a water tank and washers and stuff like that?
No, so we actually... If water is needed, like I said, if you've been off-road or something like that, we will ask if you have a water hookup, depending on your type of wash. But we actually offer a waterless car wash. So it's just a solvent we use, and we don't water is not required.
Does this kind of company exist in the area already?
Not in the area. So there is another that operates similar style in Chicago, but they only operate... north of High Park.
So, and you would be where?
We would be everywhere, but wow. We want to bring this to the South Side.
You've got to get people. You've got to buy the solvents. I don't know if you need vehicles. I don't know how this works, but what's the capitalization cost for you guys?
Capitalization cost for us, how do we make money?
How do you even get the money to get going? Or is that something you put on your credit card?
So some of it has been funded by us. We don't have any investors at this point. And hopefully we can win with this pitch tomorrow night and be able to put some more capital into the business. But it is there's not a large upfront cost for us.
Yeah, I guess so. It's an idea. It's labor intensive. But
yes.
If somebody's willing to do it, and then you pay whoever it is. So
yes,
if I give you $35, somebody's going to get 20 of them or 15 of them, and you're going to get the balance.
So, yes. So we are a startup. So that's the great thing about the IJ Institute. They take all businesses at all types, everywhere on the spectrum. So we were literally, this was a concept, an idea at the start of this, and we applied, and they liked it. So all the minutiae hasn't been worked out yet, but there will be a split between the contractors and ourselves. What that amount is right now, I can't say.
What's your plan, Sylvia? So what is your idea?
So my husband and I have a 100% plant-based laundry detergent, but it's not an ordinary plant-based detergent. Basically, I have children who have eczema. My husband has eczema, and we cloth diaper. We have four kids. So to some people, that's a lot of kids. But
to everybody, that's a lot of kids. Not to some people. I got news for you.
Definitely a lot of diapers.
Yeah.
But we needed something that was all in one because, you know, between my husband's eczema, the sweaty gym clothes, the cloth diapers, we were buying five and six different things. So we just wanted something that would bounce ammonia, take out poop, take out stains, take out sweat, but not harm the skin because there's some certain sensitivities that we all have.
So I'm going to throw my cloth diapers in my washing machine and I'm going to put in a detergent specifically for that load. That's what you're talking about, right?
That's what I was doing before.
And what are you going to do now that gets around that?
Put it in and everything can go in together.
Oh, okay.
And
but
it takes it out.
But your product is the detergent that's going to go in that load, right?
Yes.
And where did you get the idea for that? And why is plant-based the silver bullet on this?
So for us, the silver bullet was plant-based just because I found that that's probably the least irritating thing.
Do you have a background in chemical engineering or something?
I don't, but we hired a organic chemist. Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think a lot of us just go, oh, that's my lot in life. We don't say, oh, gee, I know, I'll hire an organic chemist to come up with a new detergent.
Well, I know what I don't know at this point in life. And I know I don't know how to put that together, but I do know somebody that knows somebody that can put it together for
me. So then is it come in a pod or is it a dry powder?
It doesn't. It's a liquid. We found liquid to be the most effective. Yeah. The pods are okay, but we just didn't like them because we found that sometimes that little film kind of sticks to the clothes.
Yeah, I think we know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so we did want something that would just, our formula only leaves water on the clothes.
So did you, like Josh, have a job prior to this? Do you have another job other than this?
I plead the Fifth Amendment. Yes, I still have a job.
Well, here's my question for both of you. I mean, so did you come at like, okay, so this is a solution to a problem you have.
Yes.
But I wonder for both of you, did you always think, I want to be an entrepreneur someday? Or did you just kind of fall into this? In your case, you sort of fell into this, huh?
Well, no, I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. My father always told me, find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. This is part of my pitch. Beth heard me say this before. Find a need and fill it. But I've always had this thing to, you know, try to start a business or want to start a business. My husband and I both kind of have that thing. But when we had our last baby, I wasn't working at the time. And I just kind of got tired of the issues we were having.
Do you have a college degree?
I do.
And is it in marketing or business? Does
Absolutely
it lend itself
not.
To that? What's your degree in, if I may?
Accounting.
Well, that'll help. What about you?
Communication. So, no, I'm an educator. I did not have a background in business, and for me, this was, and for us, I should say, my wife and I, this was just bred out of pure frustration and need. We're just tired of having a dirty car, and we're parents to four children, so you could imagine how the car can get, and we're just not having enough time to get everything done between work and
activities. Well, the car's the last thing that gets done. You know, that's it's funny, because when my kids got out of the house, my car got cleaner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can imagine.
And I'm one of these people that I kind of enjoy washing my car. I haven't been doing it lately, though. Brenda pointed that out to me. But I think I'm probably an outlier. I think many people listening right now said, wait a minute, if I told you where I'm working, and I'll tell you where I'm parked, when I come out, my car will be clean, they will take you up on that.
I'm glad you said that. And any businesses out there, because right now our main model is business to business.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So we
maybe I've got a fleet of cars.
Yep, a fleet. Fleet is how we're making our mark right now.
Yeah, right. Oh, do you think that's it? It's more that than an individual.
So that's all, for now, yes. I do think it's, I know this is something that it can be for everyone. But as I said, we only started at the end of the summer. We're not launching the spring 2020. We already have two commitments from two organizations to come and do fleet for their employee appreciation.
Oh, that's a nice idea. You know, I'm just thinking, all right, so Channel 9, they got those news vans, and they've got cars, sedans, SUVs that the reporters are always running out all the time. They're probably just running it through a car wash once in a while.
Probably. So when I leave the studio, you can just direct me to which office I can go talk to whoever we need to set the account up with.
Yeah, no kidding. So you're both in that same space right now, right? Like, you're operational? Are you up and running?
We are launching in spring 2020.
Spring of 2020. And how about you?
We're operational, but we just started. We tested for a couple of years, and then we officially launched this past April.
I can buy your product right now?
Mm-hmm.
Online, I presume?
Yep.
What's the website for you?
Dinobi Detergent.
Spelled Dinobi.
Yes, Dinobi.
What does that mean?
It means precious. My husband is an Igbo. He is from Nigeria.
Nice.
He's an Igbo?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that word means.
That is the tribe. That's one of the few tribes.
He is an Igbo. Is that a language then also?
That is a language,
And in Igbo, Dinobi means
precious.
Dinobi.
Yes.
Is someone going to say to you, that's a great backstory. It's a hard to understand name.
Mm-hmm.
How will you respond to that if somebody does hit the pitch?
Basically the same. it just came out of a need to let everybody know your skin is precious. I don't think we pay enough attention to the stuff that we put on. I mean, we do the skin products, we do the vegan food or the vegetables all the time, but we don't think about some of the stuff we're putting on our skin and kind of putting in the water and whatnot. So yes, I think we should all start to treat our clothes and our things precious.
But I'm thinking about the name, and the more I think about it, I think, okay, what did Google mean to me before I learned that word? Yahoo is a nonsense word, and now I know what that means. So maybe if I say, gee, I don't know what that word is, is if I have a need for your product, I'll learn that name in a hurry, D-I-N-O-B-I, dot com, dot net, dot something?
DenobiDetergent.Squarespace.com. We are working on our own
URL.
You know, URL.
Yeah, that can be expensive too, can't it? When you need to acquire web names and things like that. Beth, what are you hearing in this conversation that we're having?
Well, I think you called out one of the themes that I keep hearing, which is that entrepreneurs are extraordinary people who don't just accept the way things are and the frustrations that they're living with, but they see problems as opportunities.
Yeah.
They figure out a way to make a change that can solve their own problems, but also, you know, make life better for a whole group of new customers. So they're creative and brave in that way.
Yeah, no kidding. That's so well put, and you're right. If this hits for you, great. But if this hits for you, great for us too, right?
Right.
My car problems are solved. My eczema problem is solved. I mean, that's, I don't know if that drives you as well.
No, but definitely.
Your client base would be as appreciative as you. It's 2:52. Producer Olive said you got to take a break. How can you be part of this event? I'll tell you that next on WGN. Okay, so let's wrap this conversation up with Beth Krieger. She's the director of the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship, the IJ Clinic. If you go to ijclinic.org, you'll find out more about your organization, right, Beth?
Absolutely.
And this event where they're giving pitches on the South Side is cleverly called Southside Pitch. Go to southsidepitch.com, right?
Correct.
To find out more. Okay, and then Sylvia and Josh, you are two of the final six entrepreneurs. I hope you both win. Somebody's going to win the $5,000. There are second and third prizes as well. But if you want to find out more about this event, southsidepitch.com. If you want to help the clinic out, helping people with legal issues that are these young entrepreneurs, ijclinic.org. Good luck to you both. Stay in touch, both of you.
Thank you.
Your products go live as they come online. If I can buy the detergent, if I can get my car washed, I'll be happy to promote it on the radio.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Will do.
And then our salespeople will call you.
Okay. All right.
And we'll make you a sponsor, just like Next Door and Window.
Yay.
But good luck to you guys. Have a great time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is WGN.